Attention Austin guitarists, are you having problems with your pedals? Have you ever dreamed of having a custom-built pedal? Well, I have the guy for you. That's Paul English at English Electronics. His pedals have been used by Charlie Sexton, Billy Harvey, and more. I use the English Electronics 4049 as my main boost and crunch pedal, and I love it. It gives my tone warmth while packing the punch I need. You can visit English Electronics East Austin shop by appointment only. Call them at 512-633-5106 or go to English Electronics on Facebook. That's English Electronics. Ooh-de-de-doo.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope that you guys all had a great Thanksgiving. Whatever it is that you did on Thanksgiving, I hope you spent it with loved ones, be it family or friends or whatever. I'm doing this intro a couple days before Thanksgiving because I'm heading out of town. Didn't think I'd be home in time to put this out on Friday. So if you're listening to this, the day that it comes out, it's Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, the ominous Black Friday. Maybe you're in line right now. Maybe you're buying your child something very special that they wanted, and you're being that kind of parent that's in line right now, just waiting to get that thing, get home, wrap it up, and sit on it for a month before you give it to them at Christmas. I have a great show for you guys today. Alex Marrero, freelance musician, he's here today. He claims he's a freelance musician. That's what he says on his thing. But he is a freelance musician, but he's a master musician. He's an amazing drummer. He's an amazing singer, a great guitar player. He is a dude that does a lot of different things. You might know him as the singer of Brownout now, singing with Brown Sabbath live at shows, playing drums with people like Kerry Rodriguez, and all different kinds of people, playing percussion with different people. All kinds of people. I met him doing this song division gig like a month and a half ago or something. And we had a great time doing it. Had a great time playing with him. He's an amazing musician. He's a great drummer. He knows his stuff. He's got a deep groove. And he is very, very cool. He'll be joining members of the Sword for Doom Side of the Moon. That's a metal tribute to Dark Side of the Moon, Pink Floyd's great album. They'll be doing that Friday, next Friday, November 30th, here at Emo's in Austin, Texas. They'll also be doing it in Denver and in Brooklyn the following, in the days that follow it. So go and check that out. You can find Doom Side of the Moon. Just Google it. You can find Alex Marrero on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, through Brownout, through Brown Sabbath, wherever it is that you find people like Alex Marrero. But he is on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and he's got a website coming soon. He sent me a link to a funky website, alexmarrero.com, but that guy turns out he's like a wedding photographer. So, without further ado, I hope you guys all had a great Thanksgiving, and you're ready to enjoy my conversation with the amazingly talented and extremely cool Alex Marrero. Let's get down. So you guys played Empire Control Room last night?
No, we played Mohawk.
Mohawk.
Yeah.
Okay. Outside, obviously.
Correct. We played outside.
Crazy crowd.
It was a great crowd, man. Yeah.
How long have you... I saw... Were the Frank shows the very first shows that you did?
Well, the Frank show... Yeah, that was like a whole thing where Brownout was doing a residency.
Right.
They were doing a different theme each Thursday. I wasn't in the band yet.
Right.
And the last one, they had announced they were going to do a Brown Sabbath. And that was technically the first one.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what'd you volunteer?
Have we started? Is it all official?
Cool stuff. Yeah, yeah, it's totally official. Once your headphones are on,
right? I had actually called them because I know those guys, and you know, I was in Fantasma for like 10 minutes back in the day, and so I called them. I was like, man, I'd love to sing War Pigs or something.
Yeah,
you know. And I remember Greg, the bass player, saying to me, oh man, so many people have volunteered to sing. I don't think we'll be able to fit you in. I was like, hey, no worries, man. Just throw my name in the hat, and if it works out, great. If not, no big deal.
Yeah.
So I go to the Thursday before the Brown Sabbath one. I go to Frank to check out the show.
Yeah.
I think they were doing the Brown Sis out of James Brown thing. They got off stage. Like, hey, were you still interested in singing War Pigs? I was like, yeah. Well, can you do Sweet Leaf and this one and
yeah,
this
yeah,
one?
Yeah.
It's like, what happened to all the singers? Like, yeah, nobody. They all fell through.
Oh, bummer. You do a great job with that.
Thank you. Thank you.
How many singers on the record? It's you and Alex Maas.
On the first record, it was myself, Alex Maas, and David Jimenez, who's a great singer, phenomenal guitar player here in town. If you don't know David Jimenez, you should check him out. He's a beast.
Right.
And then the second record, which we did because we were out on the road for a while and we had established it and we had to develop a 90-minute set.
Right.
So we had a lot more songs. So we got off the road. We did a big show at Moody. And then literally the next few days, we went in and just captured that energy. And that turned into Volume 2. It felt like it would have been silly of us not to capture what we had ended up doing with all those songs.
Right.
So, yeah, that was the Brown Sabbath thing. And then, yeah, it took on a life of its own.
Yeah. Everyone seems so reluctant about it. Like, well, they want it again. Well, here we go. And you've even done it for him.
Yeah,
We've
done it for Ozzy. I mean, that was a trip, man. It's just one of those weird things. Like, it's always the thing that's a throwaway idea, right?
Yeah.
That turns into a thing. And he came down. I mean, he had heard of us before. They mentioned us. He was doing some satellite radio thing, and he was like, oh, yeah, this fucking Mexican guy sounds just like me. I'm like, what? Like, that day, I was like, is this real? Did Ozzy just talk about us? And and then, you know, that they invited us to do this show that he was doing in Mexico called Oz Fiesta, which was going to be, like, Playa del Carmen or something like that. And then we were booked, got a deposit, everything, and then the whole thing fell through.
Oh, bummer.
But then later with the whole Jack and Ozzy show, they came back around. They're like, we want you to be involved in the show. So then they chose, excuse me, Ginny's Longhorn Saloon, which is not really Ginny's anymore, I don't think. I think it's just the Longhorn Saloon.
Right.
And so, yeah, we played for them. We played Chicken Shit Bingo with them, and it ended up on TV. Bizarre, man. Singing Ozzy to Ozzy was like, what?
That is awesome, though. Were you nervous? I mean, what goes through your head when you're looking at Ozzy and you're singing his tune to
him? You know, the whole thing seemed very surreal, and I was very calm right before. And it's so awkward because it's television. There's a production crew, and it was just us. And it's just kind of like now they walk in the room, and suddenly it's like, go.
Yeah.
Like, be. You know, like, what do you say to Ozzy? Oh, hey, man, you know, I like your coat.
Do you know Einar Peterson?
I don't know that guy? I do.
We were bands together for years, but you know Billy Harvey?
Mm-hmm.
I was with Einar one time, and Billy texted him, and he's like, I'm on this, I'm at this Starbucks on Sunset. I'm standing behind Ozzy. What do I say to Ozzy? So, that's a common thing that happens to people. No one really knows what to say.
He's one of those iconic guys. You know, there's few iconic people like that left, really.
Yeah.
But it was very surreal. Suddenly, now play. And he's just sitting there. It's just very attentive, and they were super polite, very real, very cool.
Yeah.
And that was the strangest thing. Like, suddenly I look up and I'm singing Ozzy to Ozzy, and it's like, what the fuck is going on?
No shit.
So I was just like, I'm just going to close my eyes and just pretend he's not here and just do what I do.
Yeah. So,
but they were very complimentary. That whole experience is one of those weird, amazing
one of those things that happens. And even that thing that we did, that song division thing, doing those things, like just these real weird, no one told you this when you were like, hey, I'm going to grow up and be a musician.
Nope.
No one was like, you're going to be there at 9 a.m.
But how magical was it?
It was awesome.
It was great.
It's rad. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, that's the thing about being a musician that I was discussing this with someone recently, with Kerry Rodriguez, actually. And it's that thing where your life is so unpredictable. And you could be doing a gig at a campground one day. And then the next day, you're in some multi-million dollar mansion doing this huge thing. And like the dichotomies and how quickly that happens is keeps things interesting.
Yeah.
If nothing
and
else.
Real.
Very real.
I always think about it because I watched, it was a rebroadcast of the, like, you know how they do the Hall of Fame, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Yeah. And I guess they air it, you know, a month or something afterwards. Mm-hmm. Well, that Saturday or Sunday it was on, I watched it. And then Thursday I went and saw Ian McLaughlin and the Faces got inducted. And then I went and saw him at doing like a free happy hour at Lucky Lounge.
At Lucky Lounge, yeah.
Like, and it's the same dude. Yep. But you're like, you know what? That's what I want to be. I want to be a guy that just kind of goes through the whole thing.
Oh,
like
that's life.
With the
that's
same.
That's the life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's the life.
Yeah, it's not all tits and champagne.
No, I mean, that's when you're a kid, that's like, that's the fantasy, right? Yeah. Like, oh, I'm going to be a rock star.
Whatever it is that Bono's doing all the time.
Yeah.
But there's like five guys that are doing that.
What's Joe Elliott from Def Leppard doing? I want to do that.
Yeah, me too.
I kind of still do in a way. But no, it's there came a transition for me anyway. I'm sure it happened to you too, where you hit a certain age and you're doing this. You're like, yeah, my goal isn't really to be a rock star. I just want to be a musician.
Yeah.
I want to make a living and do creative work with creative people.
Yeah. Have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's really not a lot, you know, not a lot of money.
No, it ain't about the money. It really ain't.
No, you got to really love what
you
do.
But it's okay.
That's what I've never understood about people that like work on a crew. It's like, man, you, because I hate everything about playing music outside of playing.
Agreed. I mean, that's that famous quote, like, that's what you get paid to do.
Yeah.
That's what we get paid.
Yeah, we get paid.
I don't get paid to be on stage. I get paid for all the other bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, waiting.
Waiting. Hurry up and wait.
What a crazy thing. So wait, so you were in Grupo?
Would
you
play percussion? I was in Grupo for like literally 2 weeks or something, because my band at the time, Gandaya, and Grupo Fantasma, we both started at the same time at the old Empanada Parlor.
Okay.
And then they needed a percussionist, and I came in, and I remember we opened up for Los Lobos at Stubbs, and it was, and I got to sit in with Los Lobos, and it was this whole amazing thing. And then I went to Mexico, and I came back, and Jose Galeano was in the band.
Wow.
And it was perfect, because that's who needed to be in the band.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Yeah, so I've known those guys for a long, long time. So it's funny how it's all come full circle.
Yeah.
Because they'd forgotten that I was a singer, because I became a drummer.
Yeah.
You know, so then they were like, oh, shit, Alex can sing. Oh, he does the Aussie thing pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. Let's now put him in Brownout. Let's write some songs.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing now.
So you're in Over the Covers.
That was the first collaboration where I wrote some with Adrian, with Beto, and with Greg. Yeah, it's a 4-song EP of the first kind of testing the waters of what Brownout.
It's great.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's the first step. The next one is Steve Berlin just produced the new record, which will be out next year.
Oh, no shit.
And, it's really it's different. It's different. I'm really curious to see what the response will be, because it's not your granddaddy's Brownout.
Well, I think that's one thing that at least that sort of family of bands that starts with Grupo and kind of branches out to all these other people, there's like a, hey, we're just going to do shit.
Totally.
And we're going to show up and play Aussie and you're going to love it.
Or we're going to back up the GZA.
Yeah.
Or Bernie Worrell.
Or Prince.
Or Prince.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're going to like it. We're just going to make stuff and, you know.
It's an amazing crew, and of course, I'm, you know, really happy and honored to be a part of it. You know,
yeah.
It's great people, great musicians.
Everyone's involved in so much stuff. It's funny, because on your Facebook thing, as your profession, you have freelance musician.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Pretty much.
That sounds really stressful, though, as a job. I am too, I guess. But I don't know. It sounds really stressful.
Being in one band is
stressful. That's pretty stressful.
Too.
Yeah, that's true.
No, because I am a freelance musician. You know, if you need a drummer or a percussionist, you call me, you hire me, I'll go do that.
Yeah.
You need a singer, I'll do that. You need a jingle, I'll go do that. You know?
Yeah, you sang the bus.
I'm the voice of the Metro Rail.
The Metro Rail.
Yeah, and the bus is all those new red lines. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a little local claim to fame.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Is that stuff you can tell your parents? And they're like, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that stuff that makes them feel okay? Because we were pit today. I mean, I come from Cuban. Your parents are Cuban.
We have that in common.
We have that in common. And we both lived in Mexico as kids. You were born there, though, right?
I was born and raised, yeah.
But they're not, hey, man, follow your dreams. Just do what it. That's not the culture that we come from.
It's not the culture, but that was a difference. That's another level of respect that I have for my parents. Because, as you know, they went through so much, you know, when you're in exile.
Yeah.
The fact that they said to us, we left Cuba so that you could be free to do what you want.
Right, right.
Go do it.
Right, I got that. But then I got, and this is what you want to do?
Yeah, they weren't happy with...
Yeah.
I mean, they wanted me to be happy, and I guess they were always just concerned. They were just worried that it's not a stable lifestyle.
Right.
There's not a lot of money. But they were always very supportive. My dad passed a few years ago, and my mom is still very supportive. And now, it took them a while to get it. Like, they didn't get it. When I was the singer and I had Gandaya, they understood that.
Yeah.
But when that changed, and I was like a freelancer... You're a drummer now? Why aren't you singing? Coño, ¿por qué no estás cantando?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, well, I'm exploring. I'm developing as a musician, and I'm trying to open doors.
Yeah.
Right? But they were very supportive. God bless them.
Yeah.
Love them.
That's amazing. So you started off, how old were you before you moved to the States?
I moved to Austin the summer of 94, which I was 18.
Okay. And you lived in Mexico the whole time before that?
The whole time.
Okay, so you had bands and stuff there because you were a guitar guy to start off with.
Pretty much. Yeah, I asked my parents for a drum set. Excuse me. For a drum set when I was 13. And they gave me a nylon string guitar. Not what I had in mind, but it was a blessing in disguise. Because I really got into it. Learned how to play guitar. Then I graduated to an electric. 2 years later, they gave me like a PV Predator. Strat copy.
Yeah.
And a little PV amp. And I just was obsessed with metal and I became a shredder and I was really into. That's the one thing about metal. Like the musicianship is high.
Yeah, it is high.
So I appreciated that and I got into that and it taught me a lot about musicianship.
Yeah.
And then when I was 22, I was like, you know, I really just always wanted to be a drummer. So I put that aside and spent years kind of studying drums and percussion and stuff. And
so did you move here to go to school?
I moved here. I ended up going to school eventually. Yeah, I did a few years at ACC, and then I went to Southwest Texas State, which is now just Texas State.
Right.
And I was
studying. I wrote the jingle for that change.
Oh, no shit.
When it changed to Texas State.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I want to hear that.
I want to live the Texas dream, see and do everything. Let this highway carry me away. And then there was a na 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 na. Growing up in a Texas state of mind.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Texas State University.
That's cool.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice. Well done.
Ka-ching. Yeah, those college ones don't pay very well, but... there you go. So you went to school. What? Did you play in bands as a guitarist when you moved here?
I was I mean, I've been playing in bands since I was as soon as I picked up the instrument, I was, you know, playing with, you know, my friend Pablo, who ended up in Gandaya, moving here with me. I was in a metal band at 15. I was doing clubs in Mexico City. I was doing, you know, El Hijo del Cuervo, Rocotitlán, like the only clubs.
Yeah.
I was a teenager playing in a metal band.
Were the other guys teenagers or were they older?
It was a band made up of
kids.
We were all guys that were in school together. Yeah.
Tell me about Gandaya.
Gandaya.
Tell me about that.
Gandaya was a thing. It involved three of us who lived in Mexico City. My friend Pablo Larios, my friend Frederico Gaib, who I literally just ran into, and myself. We moved up here pretty much at the same time, and we started as a trio, and it kind of blossomed into like a 9-piece world music Latin funk thing.
Wow.
And we put out 2 records. We were doing really well, and relatively well, you know. It was the climb that never ends, really.
Yeah.
And so I was really proud. I was like, that was like all encompassing in my life was that band at the time. And then in 2006 we parted ways, and
do you remember like what years was that?
Gandaya existed from 99 to 2006, 2007.
Okay. So you guys, what was the band? There were a lot of like multi-person bands before Grupo that were, was it Sony No Son?
Those
guys that would play at Sol y La Luna. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
on a weekly.
Yeah. Wasn't Ray Arteaga in that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That morphed into like, a lot of that crew turned into like Tamer.
Yeah, exactly.
Which influenced all of us.
Yeah.
I mean, Cristian Fernandez from Tamer is, you know.
And all of those, Pulkingham was in Tamer.
Yeah.
My friend Jimmy Messer, who was in my band Gaudi, was in Tamer before he was in our band too.
Oh, what did he play?
He played guitar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Like before the Ricky Martin, and then all of a sudden, like Latin people, like all of a sudden people knew where Cuba was. You
right,
know what I mean?
Yeah. Because they were living La Vida Loca.
Yeah. And also like from Buena Vista Social Club, then all of a sudden like people didn't have to go like, where? You mean Scarface?
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's true. I mean, Buena Vista it expanded the global consciousness, more so the U.S. consciousness about Cuban music and Cuba in general.
Yeah. Because it's funny, I remember my grandparents getting, like, my grandmother and my grandfather both were upset that I was going to go see Scarface. Because it's a terrible portrayal of
their culture, right? But that doesn't mean, there was a lot of criminals from the Mariel, you know, thing.
But that was pretty much the only thing people saw.
This is true.
So, you know, is your dad a coke dealer? Was just shit people said to me all the time.
Yeah, it's like it kind of erased Ricky and Lucy.
Totally. Yeah.
Because Ricky, I mean,
yeah, he was
Desi Arnaz. That was like
he invented a lot of television.
He was a pioneer.
Yeah,
very multi-camera, much. Multiple cameras at sitcoms,
having your own studio.
Yeah.
To do your own thing.
Pioneer.
Yeah.
Bad motherfucker.
Yeah. It's funny how we know what regular white people just don't know this stuff about Ricky Ricardo.
They just know Lucy.
He invented, and also didn't they invent taping shows? Because before that, they didn't tape them
live. Yeah,
but they would do some rota thing where they'd film another. I can't remember, but
there's something there.
Taping it or something
for sure.
Okay, so when you decided to go underground, do the drums. You were still doing Gandaya, right?
Or not? Gandaya was done.
Was done. So it in 2007...
I was fried. I was fried because I was manager, producer, booking agent, you know, shrink, everything that had to do with that band. So I was really fried. I wasn't even creative anymore. So I secluded to playing drums and just kind of started doing... Because I always kind of played and shed at the house. And then when I took the big leap to, okay, I'm going to start playing in public... That's when I started doing gigs, and then I met Topaz, and then we started this thing called Mudphonic, and that really is what helped mold the drummer that I've become, because we basically hit the road for a few years, and we were hitting New Orleans like every 3-4 months, and nothing sheds your playing like being in New Orleans in a club playing all night, and you got... 4 or 5 bad drummers staring you down, waiting for you to get tired to get up there. And then you got all these amazing horn players that are getting up, and they're all taking their 50 choruses a piece, and you got to bring the fire behind them. So that was a huge school for me, just touring the country, just becoming a drummer.
It's just kind of been like 10 years.
It's been 10 years, yeah.
I mean, you're a really great drummer.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, man.
Thank you.
You really are. Your groove is fucking...
Oh, thank you.
Pocket's great.
I appreciate that.
Time is great.
It's
You're
fun.
Cute. It's your favorite. It's your favorite of the things.
It's my favorite.
What do you do guitar-wise anymore? Just write?
I basically just write. I haven't really played in public. It wasn't until the Doom Side of the Moon thing that I got called from Kyle Shutt from The Sword. That's a whole other tangent. Yeah. But I ended up playing guitar on that, rhythm guitar on that. And we're about to embark on a little tour with that. But yeah, basically as a writing tool. And I'll just always have one at the house, and I'm always just playing. And yeah. Acoustic.
What was the name of that PV? What was the model of that?
The PV Predator.
Predator. You still got it?
No, yeah. I pawned it years ago.
It's a drag one that I wish I had all my stupid old shit I had.
I still have the original guitar, the classical guitar that they gave me when I was a kid. Yeah,
okay,
that's in my room. I use that. Yeah, it's all so worn.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I wouldn't
starting
not
to look
stop
like
playing.
Trigger.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, all right. So you were saying something about you. What's the what is it? The moon?
The doom side
doom
of the moon.
Of the moon.
So Kyle Shutt from the band The Sword,
yeah.
Great metal band from
great
Austin.
Metal band.
Yeah, they're badasses. So he approached me because he sat in with us. Adrian Casala produced one of the Sword records. Kyle sat in with us when we did the big Brown Sabbath show at Moody. And he got this random idea one day, which started out as a joke again. It's like, oh, we'll do a doom metal version of Dark Side of the Moon. Suddenly, it didn't seem so silly. So he put it together and he called me. He's like, hey, I want you to sing. And I was like, oh, fuck, man. I'm just coming out of the Brown Sabbath thing. I'm trying to get away from cover stuff. And I sat with it for a while and I heard the demos. And I'm like, it's going to be too much fun to pass up.
Yeah.
So we did, and we did the full record, Dark Side of the Moon, as Doom Side of the Moon. And then we've released a subsequent EP with other Pink Floyd classics. And we did a big show at Emo's, which was sold out for the release. And now we're doing a four-city run at the beginning of December. We're doing Austin, Dallas, Denver, Brooklyn.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where are you playing in Austin?
We are playing Emo's again.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
What about Dallas?
Dallas, what's that place? The mechanic, the guy that's got the shop.
That's a weird.
He's got a TV show, The Gas Monkey, something like that.
I've never heard that.
It's a big club.
Okay.
Gas Monkey?
I don't know.
Damn it, I'm going to have to look it up.
There's a lot of, you know, people can also, where do they find that? You know, there's no alexmarrero.com.
There is, yeah, don't tell me that.
Come on, man.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
It's tough on someone like me trying to figure out,
it's
get
so
the dirt.
True. There's, yeah, this is true.
Dig it up.
This is true.
I mean, I went through your Facebook stuff, but then you don't.
I'm pretty cryptic.
Yeah, you. I mean, there's nothing wrong with not having a thing, but a website would be good just so people.
No, you're absolutely right, and I have the domain, and I've just not done it for a few years, and it's ridiculous. And thank you for giving me shit about it.
And you were talking about playing with Carrie Rodriguez. I saw that you were doing that thing that she does at the Cactus.
Yeah,
which is called
Laboratorio.
Laboratorio.
Man, that thing.
Susanna Schaffel was on there.
She was the guest last time. Laboratorio, man, that's a wonderful project. I'm really excited about and really honored to be a part of.
Yeah.
Because it's A-list players, man. Like, they keep me on my toes. Like, it's basically, the concept is Carrie and Michael Ramos kind of brainstormed it. And so it's Michael Ramos. Roscoe Beck, David Polkingham,
Jesus,
myself, Carrie Rodriguez. And that's the core band. And we do it once a month, whenever we all have chunks of time. So we'll separate like 3 or 4 months and we'll do once a month. Mm-hmm. And every month we'll have a different featured guest. Mm-hmm. So then we'll learn, that special guest will bring in a certain batch of tunes and then we'll learn those. So it's always really new, interesting. You never know where it's going to go. We've had Ephraim. She made me the featured guest one day too.
Oh, really?
Which was cool. Adrian, Susanna, Gina Chavez. Like, we've been doing it for a little over a year now. And it's
just
awesome. There's something really magical, especially the Cactus, which is just like, it oozes vibe, you know? So it's really special. It's a great project. Yeah.
I played with Ramos when I was 16. That's when I met him. Yeah.
He's a good dude, man.
He's a great dude.
I love that guy.
Yeah, me too. I really do. He's one of the greats. One of the greats. So, okay, so you guys do that, And is there one for December?
There's
November?
One next week. Yeah, in 4 days. Yeah.
Who's that?
It's going to be Rosie Flores.
Oh, cool. Yeah. She's awesome. She was just on the show.
Yeah, nice.
She's a cool, cool lady.
I've never played with her, and I don't really know her. I've met her peripherally.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it.
I never knew. I remember one night I opened for her, and then like a bunch of dudes from the Beach Boys and the Cow Sills showed up and sat in with her.
Where was this?
It was at Continental Club.
Nice. Yeah.
I was just like, it wasn't like Mike Love. It was like guys that are in the touring Beach Boys band, but it's like that dudes that have been in the band
longer than the band.
Than the actual band was,
totally.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And yeah, I was super just like blown away, like, whoa. And then like when I was doing all my learning about her for the show,
mm-hmm.
like just kind of her, I didn't realize that she was part of that new wave of country in the mid 80s that was like Steve Earle, Lucinda, Dwight Yoakam, Rosie Flores.
She went in a more kind of a rockabilly kind of trip. Absolutely.
Yeah. Interesting. It's amazing to get to play with all of these people you get to play with. I mean,
man, I'm blessed, man. I'm involved in some really cool projects with some really wonderful musicians.
Yeah. I saw you. Do you play with Golden Dawn Orchestra regularly?
I do. Golden Dawn is a collective.
Yeah.
But, we played ACL a couple of weeks ago. I couldn't do this West Coast tour that they're on right now because I had the Brown Sabbath show last night mm-hmm. and other stuff. But that's kind of what's cool about Golden Dawn is that it's a big pool of musicians and it's a revolving door. And everybody's wearing some sort of mask, so you really never know what you're going to get. You don't know who's who a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But it's super fun. I mean, I toured Europe with them a couple of years ago, did the first European tour, and it's just fun, man.
Yeah.
It's just fun. It really is.
Was Sarah Hauser playing those ACL shows? She's great.
We had the whole crew. She was there. Laura Scarborough was there. John Spies and I were the percussion section with Rob Kidd.
Jesus.
Yeah, no, it was great.
Yeah.
It was fun.
So you and Spies have switched off some gigs. You started off on drums with Kalu.
That's right.
And now he's taking the
That's right.
Kalu
he took
gig.
It over. He took it over. We both recorded the record, the Kalu and the Electric Joint record that came out almost a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we split duties. I did half the record, he did the other half, and he took over the gig. And he's a monster, man. I mean, Spies is just he's a competent drummer.
Yeah.
And percussionist.
Yeah, you too, man.
Thank you.
So who all are you playing with now? Like who?
So that's the list would be Brownout. Brownout presents Brown Sabbath, which are two separate things.
Right.
Doom Side of the Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie Rodriguez Laboratorio.
And that's drums.
That's drums and vocals. What else? Golden Dawn Orchestra. I play drums with the surf band called the Avocados, which is super fun.
Really?
So fun, man. Playing
that
surf
like
drums
oh,
all night. It's the best.
That's good.
And Sly Curtis, that's another fun thing with another kind of all-star cast in Austin. Bruce Hughes is on bass.
Oh, yeah.
It's a 13-piece. We do once a month. The last Tuesday of every month. Last Tuesday of the month at 1 to 1.
I need to see this. Who else is in the band?
Man, there's 13 people.
So it's you and Bruce.
It's Hector Ward, Pearl Turner on vocals, you know, assorted horn players. It's 13 people. But we do the music of Curtis Mayfield and Sly Stone.
That just sounds like something I would like a lot.
It's super fun, man. Yeah. We've been doing it for, I think, almost 2 years. And like, it's just the last Tuesday of every month. And people know about it. And they come and they get down. And it's just such a great exercise for me personally to learn and play and interpret those songs. That music is, forget about the relevance thematically of bands like, you know, Sly and the Family Stone, what they were talking about, being an integrated band, multi-gender band. Like, this is revolutionary stuff when they were doing it.
Yeah.
And it's just as relevant and important now.
Yeah.
And then you got, you know, the message in the music, which is, shit don't change.
No.
It really doesn't.
No.
Curtis Mayfield, same thing.
Same thing.
Social injustice and unity as humans. And can we figure this shit out already? Right?
Yeah.
Those are the underlying themes. And it seems like same every day.
Yeah. It is weird the way those things, that happens whenever I see the comedian Bill Hicks. Like, I was a big fan of his.
Man, I love Bill
when
Hicks.
When I see him now, it's just like, it's the same.
Well, I remember when the second Gulf War came
about. I was
about,
just about to say, like, all of the jokes were exactly the same.
Same President Bush. Like, holy shit.
Yeah, now you have to insert names, but yeah, there was a point where thing. It was like he had been dead for 10 years and you just, it was this, it was
totally.
Like he was alive.
It was insane.
Yeah.
No, Bill Hicks was, he was a special, special being for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, he said things and he had an awareness that a lot of people did not have. And he, I don't know that he gets enough credit. Like the comedians that, real comedians, he's like a comedian's comedian, yeah. You know, because he's a badass.
Yeah.
But I don't know that there's a lot of major awareness of him in the general,
right.
You know, general market, if you will.
I lived in Houston after he had left Houston, like in the late 80s. And I hung out with a lot of comedians that worked the comedy workshop and the Laugh Stop and all these places. And they lived in the wake of that dude. Like,
amazing.
They were very open about the fact that they were not him. Like, it was very, I mean, they were either bitching about him or praising him, or he's not as great as everyone says
right.
he is. Like, but he was the focal point. Cause I just remember going like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
Like, he really ruined
you. I mean,
you guys.
He was pushing, he's one of those figures, like in any kind of art form or even any kind of work setting, you have someone that's pushing boundaries and doing something unique,
yeah.
that's gonna stir controversy.
Yeah.
Even within the community, even the comedians are probably like, oh, fuck you, but damn it, I love you.
Yeah, yeah, that's the way they were.
Yeah,
it's pretty crazy. Did you ever see him? No,
no,
he was gone by the time you moved to the States.
By the time I moved here, he passed that. I think he passed in 94.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, his records, I think Ryko put out
yeah.
a bunch of his discs, and you know, I had those on repeat all the time.
Yeah,
it was just brilliant.
Yeah, it's great. It's great touring. Do you like to tour?
Touring is a mixed bag. It gets harder with age, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
It does. And touring in big bands like Brownout and Golden Dawn, it's just challenging because it's a lot of mouths to feed and it's a lot of hotel rooms and a lot of expenses. I like to tour, but probably not for the reasons that you'd think. I like to tour because I like playing every night.
Yeah.
I like what being on the road does to a band.
Yeah.
It becomes this organic kind of rhythm and kind of if everyone's pulling their weight, and even if they're not, you just become this thing that you start communicating, the music develops into this tightness that's what I dig.
Yeah.
Like being on stage every night and seeing what we can do different or what we can do better. By the time you get home after a month-long tour, you play a show and it's like you're firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
That's what I get off on.
Yeah, me
too. The rest of it is just same as the other stuff. You know, that's what you get paid for.
Yeah.
Is the sit around and wait. Hurry, we got to make it to soundcheck. Okay, we're here.
Yeah.
And now wait for 4 hours.
Yeah. With Brownout Presents Black Sabbath, Brown Sabbath, is there a bus involved with that?
No.
Ooh.
No.
Fuck, that's
not.
A lot of dudes. You know that happened. You know, remember the first really big band that I saw like that was Polyphonic Spree.
Yeah.
And I just remember from the time they walked on stage to the time they left, I was just having an anxiety attack. Just all I could think was like, how the fuck did they?
How
get
are you
that?
Doing this?
How does that Fife guy get to rehearsal? How did they even get to Austin? Who has to organize everyone to come and be here at this certain time so we can leave?
Logistical nightmare. I mean, doing that with a 4-piece is a pain in the ass.
Yeah, that's,
how many is it, like 22 or something?
It's yeah. 26 pieces when
no.
I saw it.
I mean, yeah. I think there's a lot. I mean, I don't know the inner workings of that band, but I've known people that have played in the band, and I think it's sort of a, I don't know. I might be making it up, but I think there's just some people that just want to be there and they're just kind of
yeah.
volunteers, if you will.
No, I do. I know that.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, then there's
yeah.
specific musicians that come in and do specific things.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to speak for the general workings of that band, but
yeah.
it's fascinating.
Pretty fascinating. So it is hard to be in a really big band. I'm in a 7-person band.
That's hard too, man.
Yeah.
I thought I was done with big bands. I was done with Mudphonic. We were at 4. I'm
right.
like, it's manageable. Touring is easy.
Right.
You make more bread.
Yeah.
It's great. And then suddenly, I'm in all these bands with Golden Dawn, sometimes with 17 people. Sly wow. Curtis, 13 people. Brownout, 10 people. Like, no!
Yeah.
It's great. I'm not complaining.
Yeah.
It's great. The sound is amazing, and it's a wonderful musical experience. But it is more challenging because it's a lot of personalities. It's a lot of extra noise.
What do you turn down? You don't have to name names.
No, you're like, dude, do you not play something?
No. Like, I'm the same way. Like, I'm like, yes, we were at that thing. We did a thing for this company called Song Division. It's Absolutely. A thing that it's very hard to even just describe on a podcast.
It's really weird to describe. It's an amazing company.
It's an amazing company. They do songwriting as a team building exercise. They bring in professionals.
Yep.
And then you play some tunes for them at the end.
And every time is different. Every one that we've done separately has been totally different.
It's been totally different.
So that's great. What do I turn down?
I love that kind of stuff. I like going in for 2 days and immersing myself in a thing and then like...
That was awesome. That was my favorite one. That was like the third one I'd done with them. That was my favorite one. Yeah. That was really, really something about how it was set up and the songwriting was much quicker.
Yeah.
And it was cool.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm kind of in a place where... I mean, I'm a musician, so I have to take gigs, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not going to turn down your gig if, you know, I play for money. This is,
yeah.
I need to pay bills just like everyone else. But I do, because my schedule is so crammed, because I play with so many different projects, I do have more of a, I can be a little more selective, because mm-hmm. I have to be selective with my time.
Yeah.
Because I also want to do my own things and write and, you know, live my life.
Yeah.
But, it really depends. It really depends. I like to play music. So if it's something that's cool that I can connect with on some level, and it's musicians that are, there's no drama, and the music is going to be good, I'm down.
Yeah.
This is what I like to do.
It's funny. I do these consultations sometimes with people at Austin Music Foundation with artists, and there was a guy in there that was talking about, he was like, yeah, this guy wants me to come sing on this thing that he's writing. He wants me to come sing at his house on his studio thing. And he's like, so I'm just trying to work out how much I'm going to make off of this. And I was like, well, is this like a big money making thing? Is it going to be like, why don't you just go?
Yeah.
And he's like, what do you mean? I was like, dude, I make my living playing music, and half the shit I do, I just do it because you need to go do stuff.
Exactly. You never know.
Sometimes
where
you just give it away.
Yeah, totally.
It doesn't matter.
You could get something from it that's other than money.
Yeah. It's not.
Which is a lot of times better.
It's weird. And it's a guy that kind of starting out too, where it's like, man, if you're going to see how much everyone's going to pay you for everything, you are going to have a fucking terrible time doing this.
Yeah.
And don't quit your day job.
Totally. Because
you're never going to make the same amount of money.
No. No. You're just spinning your wheels and making yourself miserable.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be aware of it.
Yeah.
And knowing your value.
Yeah.
That's an important one too.
Yeah.
And however,
there are gigs and there are people where you're like, shit, man, I'll go fucking sing on your thing for free.
Absolutely.
I got nothing to do Wednesday.
I'll go play drums on that track, or I'll go play congas on it. Let's go. I'll do some shout coros. Let's go have fun.
Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah.
You can't let it squeeze the fun out of it.
No.
Because
that's the one
thing
about getting older. I've seen there were guys older than us in the Ramos generation that I saw just kind of get wedged out of the scene because they were like, you don't know who I am. You don't know what I've done. You know what I mean? It's like, no one cares.
No.
Just show up and be the person you were when you were 14. And you walked into the room with the other guys and you plugged in and you just like went,
totally.
You know,
it is hard to maintain that. It's a tough balance.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I can see how it's easy to get bitter. It's easy to get jaded. This is a shitty business.
Yeah.
It really is. But
it's not like you didn't know that.
Exactly. At some point you realize, oh, wait, this could really suck.
Yeah.
But the positives, if you approach them correctly, can be supremely enriching to your life.
Yeah.
I feel super enhanced by all the things that I do creatively.
Yeah.
There's no price tag on that.
No.
There's really not. And again, I need to eat just like everyone else, but it is, you have to remind yourself.
Yeah. So what I meant, like, what would you say no to is like, say you don't have a connection. Someone gives you like, hey, do you want to come do this thing? And you go listen to it and you're like, you know what? I don't connect.
I'm really honest with people.
Yeah.
That's one thing that I value in people.
Yeah.
So I try to be the same way because I don't like wasting people's time either.
Yeah.
And it's like, if I'm not feeling it, I'm like, I don't think I'm the right guy for it because I'm not going to be fully involved. Like, my soul's not going to be in it. And if you want a certain thing, then I just want to believe in it because you're going to get the best of me that way. Right?
Yeah. You're pretty studious too. I mean, you know, when you do a gig like that Song Division thing, you kind of see people learn the stuff or, you know.
I find that to be very important.
Yeah.
Like, you have to not take yourself seriously, but you have to take what you're doing seriously.
Yeah.
Like, I take it very seriously. And in a thing like that, I just want to feel good about myself with the other people. I don't want to let people down. We're all in this together. If someone, you don't want to be lifting other people's slack all the time, right? I want to be prepared and I want to do a good job because if everyone does that, like we saw, the experience is 1,000 times better.
That's good. It's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's no, fun. No music. Drama.
No. No. I. It's funny because I talked to a lot of people about that where like a lot of people would rather have a, instead of a virtuoso asshole, like a guy that's good, but like it can hang.
Man, I learned that. I learned that being a band, I had a lot of lessons being a band leader, which I think have now, I hope, made me a better sideman because I understand what the band leader is doing and all the work that goes behind it and what the, all the bullshit you're dealing with and putting all these pieces together. So I lost my train of thought.
No, I think the opposite happens too. I mean, the both things happen. You learn how to be a better frontman.
Totally.
From being a sideman too,
because
you know how you want to be treated.
Absolutely.
In those situations.
Oh, that's what it was. Like, I remember being in Gandai and being the band leader, and you would have this monster musician. But it's not always what was needed. Like, you want someone that can hang and someone that doesn't have to play 3,000 notes if they don't need to. Like, just play three. That's what the music requires.
It's interesting in those big bands that you played with, you definitely learned that pulling out and leaning in when you need to be is far more effective than trying to be heard the whole time over a giant band.
Man, there's
people.
So many things going on already.
Yeah.
Space is being filled. Like, I've talking about this with a couple people recently. We're so afraid as musicians sometimes to not say something when, just like in conversation, sometimes not saying something is what's needed. Mm-hmm. Silence.
Yeah.
Especially if there's so many things going on, you don't want to add to the clutter. You want to enhance the conversation, right?
Yeah.
Silence. Just stop playing for 12 bars. See what happens.
People really notice when you come back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Suddenly your part's real sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah. That's another thing that I think that comes with age.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
For like sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Patience. Yeah. And,
yeah. Just being able to walk in and do what you need to do, walk out, not like run around the whole time. Like, look, I'm doing this.
Yeah,
I'm doing it.
Yeah. There's nothing to prove.
Yeah.
Like, you realize that you prove yourself in other ways.
Yeah.
That are more important.
Yeah.
Play the right part, not just any part.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And you give lessons too?
I do. I teach at the Austin School of Music 2-3 times a week. I teach
a lot of good dudes there.
Great people there. Great people there. I teach drums and guitar over there, and it's fun.
So you prefer, out of all of the things that you do, playing drums?
It really is my favorite. I mean, each of them have a special place. Like, singing is what I've been doing the most. I've been singing since I was two.
Yeah.
And it's something that has always come very naturally, and it's very challenging and very rewarding.
Right.
But I'd rather be on the drums, kind of controlling, not controlling, but manipulating the music from a different place.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, I don't want to have to worry about the crowd or, riling them up or engaging them in conversation.
Right.
I just want to be back there kind of driving the bus and just hanging out and embellishing and listening and just rhythm. I love rhythm. I mean,
yeah,
it just, you know, it starts with your heartbeat, right? And then from then on, it's just everything. There's rhythm in everything.
Yeah.
It's my favorite by far.
Yeah.
I feel like I can express myself the most on the drums, even though I don't have all the chops and abilities. I feel like I can release, because there's no words.
Yeah.
It's just that connection with music, with the ether, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I tap into it much sooner with the drums than with anything else.
Yeah. It's the most primal.
Yeah.
Too. And singing too, but like, do you just.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Tapping in. Yeah, it's tapping into that primal thing and just that ethereal, non-spoken thing.
Yeah.
For sure.
I think you should make a website.
I think you're right.
Squarespace. I did it. I have one of those things where I do say, I got the Squarespace, and then I was intimidated by technology, so I paid for a thing for a year that I never used,
right.
And then they're like, hey, it's running out. I was like, shit, man, I'm putting out an EP. I need to have a website.
Sure.
So I was like, here I go. Fucking hour and a half later, I had a website.
Really?
Super easy, yeah. It is.
It's one of those daunting it's things just like, that's not
yeah,
that daunting.
It's like one of those things like, yeah, it's like laundry.
Your website is like laundry.
Yeah, it is. But, all right, so what about Clandestino?
Clandestino?
Does that happen at all anymore?
The Clandestino All-Stars was the idea of...
Clandestino All-Stars.
It was Greg Gonzalez, the bass player in Grupo and Brownout and Money
Ramos.
Teacher. He wanted to do... He's like, man, let's just do Manu Chao's Clandestino
it's
record.
It's a fucking great record.
It's amazing record. Amazing record. And... It just turned 20, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I remember getting it. I remember I was in Spain at the time, and I was a huge Mano Negra fan, because in Mexico, Mano Negra was huge.
Okay.
And that's the original band that had Manu Chao.
Okay.
It's this really interesting set of records that they put out, very punk energy, all over the place. Mano Negra, they're great. And I was in Spain, and I was in the airport, and I saw that the record... The day it came out, I bought it at the airport, Manu Chao Clandestino. And I had a Discman, because this was the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And I heard it on the flight back home, and then I just did not stop listening to it for years, it seems.
Yeah. I remember that was a record people listened to a lot.
It was kind of a game changer for that style. It was so unique and kind of recorded all over the world with just a four-track. And so Greg came up to us, and he's like, man, I want to do this record. So we got... Brian Ramos, who was the singer in Charanga Cakewalk for a while, and Michael Ramos, and we did the Clandestino All-Stars.
Oh, in Charanga Cakewalk, Michael's band.
Which I was in for
a little bit.
Yeah, we played guitar in that towards the end.
Who was the, what was the guy? He was so great. He smiled. He was also in the Bodines. What's his name?
Jake Owen.
He's in New York now?
He's in New York. He's doing really well. He's
good.
Doing great. He's a phenomenal player.
I really liked that guy.
Yeah, Jake is good people, man. He got struck by lightning. Can you believe that?
Wow.
Yeah.
Is he okay?
And he survived.
Yeah.
And he's playing. And he's happy. Yep.
I wonder what happened. I mean, that must be a weird feeling. I hate getting shocked.
Man, no. I can't even imagine that. Surprised. I mean, just surviving.
Yeah.
Insane. And that he can play.
Yeah.
Because that could just totally affect your nerves you know, your muscles.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Jake was in. I took over for Jake when he left Charanga Cakewalk, which was preposterous because Jake is like top tier guitar player, like amazing. I'm not.
You're not. Oh, come on, man.
But I came in and I was kind of auxiliary guy with Charanga. Like, if I would play guitar, if Jake was there, we'd both play guitar. If Eljon wasn't there, Eljon on percussion, I'd play percussion. So Charanga, I think I was in the last incarnation of Charanga Cakewalk, which was really, really fun. And that's how I first connected with Michael Ramos, through Brian Ramos, who was the original singer in Grupo Fantasma.
Wow.
So that was the Clandestino All-Stars, was Brian Ramos, Michael Ramos, Greg Gonzalez and myself. We did one show inside at the Mohawk, and we performed the record, and it was magical and beautiful and amazing. And then we did like three, maybe four subsequent performances, and then that was that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was super fun, though. What a great record to dissect and figure out how to play with just four live pieces. And
yeah.
It was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
That's awesome. The Brownout, new Brownout music coming.
Yeah, hopefully, probably spring, early summer next year. We were just in Washington. We recorded Tiny Desk.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was
fun. Are you going up there to play a show soon, too?
We just did. Yeah, that was basically, we booked some shows around that.
Okay.
So we did Tiny Desk.
When does Tiny Desk come out?
We're not sure yet because we did play, we're kind of debuting a few songs from the new record where I'm singing and fronting. So we'll see. We're trying to figure out if that can come out in conjunction with the record to make the most of it.
Yeah.
So that would make the most sense. So we're waiting to see what they say about that.
What's it like going to that studio?
That was my second time this year, ironically. What? I went with Golden Dawn in February. Yeah.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, that one's out there too. Yeah, it was fun. There was a lot of us there.
Yeah, yeah.
It really is like, it's an office building.
Yeah.
It's just NPR offices. You get out of the elevator and you go over there and there's all these desks and this one is where you're going to be.
That's Bob Boylan, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's fun. I mean, it's stripped down. You can't be very loud.
Yeah.
And but there's people, all the people, it's like around their lunchtime. So they all come, you have an audience. It's really fun. It's really cool. I'm blessed that I got to do it once, let alone twice.
Yeah, that's so rad.
Yeah, super rad. Super rad.
My friends were on it earlier this year. Do you know Fragile Rock, the emo puppet band?
Oh, no, I don't know them.
They're cool as
shit. Are they from here?
Yeah.
Wow,
they're very, very cool. It's a very sad puppet. It's really great.
What are they called?
Fragile Rock. Instead of Fraggle Rock, it's Fragile Rock because he's fragile.
I'm going to look that
emo.
Up.
Yeah. It's the world's only emo puppet band.
Because he's emo. Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I tried to produce that band. But you know what? I think they did the right thing. They just were like, hey, man, we're just going to go to our friend's house and record. Because I was kind of like, well, man, I don't know. I think that drummer's going to need a click. But the drummer didn't need a click. Mm. You know what I mean?
I do.
They just needed to be them.
Exactly.
And I was definitely like, but I was in love with just the whole life. Like the first time I ever saw them, I was like, this is the best thing that's ever happened
to
really
me. It just really clicked.
Yeah. I was like, it's stupid. It's fucking hilarious. And some of the songs are really good.
Awesome.
But like in this Rocky Horror Picture Show way.
Love it.
Super awesome. Yeah.
I'm going to look that up.
Yeah. Fragile Rock. All right. So, Alex, people can find you on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.
I'm actually not on Twitter. I'm not a fan of Twitter.
You are on Twitter.
I am. I just don't.
You haven't put anything up?
No, I haven't put up in years. I don't like Twitter. But
why don't you like it? Because the president?
No, I didn't like it from before then. I don't know. There's just something about constantly. It's just like these quick, I don't know. Something about it kind of rubs me the wrong way for some reason. Mm. I mean, I'm on Facebook. I don't have an artist page on Facebook. Maybe I should do that too.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing me on your podcast and showing me that I need to be more professional. Thanks.
Dude, you're easily one of the best musicians, I think, that this town has to offer. And definitely a guy that's not out tooting his own horn all the time. You really are. You're a real treasure.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Is there anything I'm missing here?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, you can find me on Instagram under Music Marrero.
Yeah.
That's Marrero.
Also go to Brownout's got a website.
I'm involved there. And just my regular Facebook page.
I mean, you're in the band, right?
Oh, I'm in the band.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I've been in the band officially for a few years now.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I was going to say, that like you didn't say that you were, but I was like, you got to.
Oh, no, I'm in the band. No, I'm in the band. No. The new album is just, I think there's 11 tracks. Two of them are instrumental, I think. And then the rest, or three. And then the rest are vocal tunes.
How do they handle that with you? They go, hey, here's a track, and then you just sing, and that's it?
You know, it's been different. We're starting, because it's been a real organic kind of transition. Because, I mean, Brownout has an extensive history on its own as a Latin funk instrumental entity.
Yeah.
Like, they've put out some great records. Yeah. So then this Brown Sabbath thing did, and it kind of did this thing that it did, and then we realized, well, hey, this kind of fits and works. Let's start writing. And then Over the Covers came up. That was our first little dipping our toe in the water with me as a singer. And then for this new record, then we kind of went full on and collaborated with you know, with Adrian, with Beto, and with Greg, and I came up with the lyrics and melodies and just built these songs, and it's a different Brownout. It's not, you know, the instrumental Latin funk, but it seems like, you know, evolution is important.
Yeah, but and it's not like you became a rockabilly band or something.
No. Yeah. No, not at all. So it's exciting because, you know, it's been very organic, and the fact that I can play percussion has been good to not have to be, I don't always want to be in the middle either. So I can play timbales and fill a role in an important voice percussion wise for the older songs.
Yeah.
And then for the new songs, I can step up in the middle and do a whole other thing.
That's
so
cool.
I think the Scootin' show we did last a few months ago was a really good example of what the band could be within the different facets of what it's been and what it's going to be.
Yeah.
So it's exciting. Yeah, I'm curious to see what people's reaction is, but it's definitely, it's fun. I like it.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great band.
Indeed. Thank you.
Glad you're in it.
Me too.
Well, dude, thanks for doing the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're a great guy. I'm glad
Likewise.
That we're friends.
Indeed.
Tell Amanda I said hi.
Will do. Never what you learn. Don't you see the way things work?
Ooh, was never really that great. My man, Alex Barrero. From Brownout, Brown Sabbath, and so many more. He'll be doing the Doom Side of the Moon show next Friday, November 30th at Emo's with members of the Sword playing metal versions of Dark Side of the Moon. Doing a metal version of Dark Side of the Moon. They'll also be playing in Denver. And in Brooklyn, go to Doom Side of the Moon. Just Google Doom Side of the Moon, and you'll find it. You will. That's what I did, and that's how I found it. So anyway, great talking to Alex Marrero. You can find him on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and he is building a website, thecurrentalexmarrero.com. He sent me a link to it, and it's some kind of wedding photographer guy. So don't go by that. But look for him on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Great guy, great musician, great drummer, great singer, just great all-around musician, and I love talking to him. I'm glad that we're friends. Alex Marrero. Hey, don't forget, man, when you're out there checking out, like, Brownout, Brown Sabbath, Doom Side of the Moon, whatever, you can subscribe to this podcast on all the mediums that you listen to him on, all right? I hope you're having a great Black Friday, whatever that means to you. If it means standing in line at a place, laying around in your underwear, feeling fat with your family at your grandma's house or something weird like that. Or working. You know, God bless you if you have to go back to work today after a big Thanksgiving situation. I hope you guys all have a great weekend, whatever it is you're doing. I want to thank Alex for coming by. Great talking to him. Have a great weekend. Let's get down. You'll never get back to me.